Thanks for joining us. I hope you're safe and sound at home. And wanted just to introduce you to, for some of you who may be new to Health Rosetta, we're very focused in on empowering community-owned health plans, and we define community in the broadest sense. So a community can be an employer community, it could be a union community, and of course it can be an actual physical place. And so that's a big focus of ours. And what you're going to hear today is a great example. Somebody, you know, sort of leaving behind what I'd call kind of the renter mindset and saying, gosh, employees are our most valuable asset. Let's make sure we're stewarding that asset well and providing great care, but not putting people in financial jeopardy. Go ahead and advance the slide, please. And so the framework we have, which essentially has been developed over the last decade, looking at how are people cracking the code, the shipping container metaphor we use. The blue is kind of the underpinnings of a plan that's really very necessary. There's some savings opportunities there, but of course, most of the savings opportunities and better value opportunities are in this more purple area. And today's webinar is going to very much focus in on what we call transparent open networks. You're going to hear some about reference-based pricing, which is kind of a bridge to that. And you know, if you haven't seen them before, we will share some links to previous webinars that we've had on topics like transparent pharmacy benefits and a lot on value-based primary care. That's really an important foundation. And you'll see there, really, we have examples in every corner of the country, in every industry virtually, large companies, small companies, rural, urban, I mean, as small as a 7-person company up to, you know, thousands of employees. And we really haven't seen any of these things not work. You may take a different sequence and prioritize things depending on the particular conditions and the company's appetite. But this is really the blueprint we get into in those webinars, as well as on our site and in the books that we'll have a free download link for up on the screen in a minute. So with that, I'd like to introduce Jenny West and Alex Dampf. Alex is a Health Rosetta advisor, and Jenny's the CFO of RE West, it's a trucking company. And so maybe to start out, if you all can just provide a little overview of the company, sort of the number of employees, number of people on the plan, maybe some of the top line results. We'll get into kind of how you drove those results, but it'd be great to know what happened. You know, were you like other companies in terms of seeing increases year over year? Is that still going on? Kind of how's that going? So maybe just start there with a little top line view.
My name is Jenny West. I'm with RE West. We're a trucking company in Ashland City, Tennessee, very close to Nashville. We've been in business for over 50 years. It's a family business. I am third generation. My brother and I are primary owners. We employ 160 employees. We are in about 15 to 16 different states. I've got a large presence in Baltimore, El Paso, Texas, Michigan. We have currently about 95 participants. We were very traditional in our view of health insurance. We started to kind of get out of our box when we discovered a different way to insure workers' comp and general auto liability. We belong to a captive. We started that in 2003. So we tend to be kind of progressive. We like to look at things in a different way. It's been a struggle for us from the beginning with just maintaining like a traditional mindset. And so we were on the lookout for something different and something new. And we had a desire, and we were highly motivated to try to do better. And walked Alex.
And how'd you all meet and come across each other, and sort of how did that conversation go?
So this is probably one of the few success stories that happened from someone in my position dropping in on someone unannounced and uninvited. So we actually, I picked, I think, 20 companies in our market, and we took the CEO's guide, the first edition, and we dropped it off with some, like a little gift bag, and dropped it off to Jenny, and she emailed me back because we put in the gift box, we had the book, we had a little handwritten note, but we also put, I bought a bunch of fake money off Amazon, and we just kind of said, hey, there's hidden money on your plan that you're losing every year. Here's some of it. If you'd like to see the real thing, give us a call. And so I was out all day delivering these all over Nashville, and I had an email when I got back that said, you know, funny gift, give me a call in 2 weeks and we can talk. So we kind of set up a meeting, and we just went through everything. And the funny thing was that Ari West was coming off a renewal with no injuries, fully injured. So they had a rate pass, and they were about, I'd say, 3 months into the plan, and they were actually getting a little bit of data, and it wasn't going well. I mean, their current broker was already telling them, it's probably going to be a bad year at your renewal. You should probably prepare for it. And so we just kind of started talking about a different way of doing it, of, you know, why it was going to be the way that it was, and what were the things that you could do to maybe mitigate some of that long term. And that's kind of, you know, we had a couple conversations, and then Jenny and her brother, you know, we met a couple times, and then they finally just said, you know what, this lines up with all the other things that we're trying to do in our business. So let's go ahead and move forward. And I think we'll get into it, but it was a little bit of a hectic first year.
Yeah. And what happened? I mean, we'll get into sort of how you got there and sort of what you're doing, but at a top line, what was the impact of making the change? Did you see cost savings, and what magnitude, if there was cost savings?
Well, yes. We were looking at 2018, our renewal was going to be about $680,000, an average cost of $7,157 per employee. So in 2019, we were faced with a 25% increase. In walked Alex, and actual numbers, we spent $578,684 per employee, 15% reduction.
Nice. Maybe talk a little bit of, you know, obviously any change has its, you know, challenges, whether it's implementing new software or, you know, whatever. Health benefits is no different, but it really involves something that's very personal to people and can be, you know, people typically are in their, some of their most vulnerable moments, as we know, you know, right now with what's going on. How is this received, right, in terms of rolling this out, and talk a little bit about some of the tactics that you employed and sort of how that went.
It started with a kind of a team environment. We included HR and IT and just different people, the recruiters, people that are speaking to our employees, everybody that, you know, touches someone walking through the door. We included them from the very beginning because this is so different, and we wanted a buy-in ownership on every level, because we felt like it would take a lot of communicating, a lot of touches to drive the buy-in from our employees. And we were also faced with this increase, and it was like a repeat of the previous year, And so everybody's just a little wore out from all the bad news. So opportunity is here. Do we embrace it? How do we communicate it? So once we had buy-in from everyone, it was instant, really. Alex is a highly competent, very motivated, passionate. He's a health insurance nerd. So he was all about it, and he convinced us. We had faith, and we believed in what he was telling us.
Anything you want to add on that, Alex, as far as that initial kind of round of activity?
Yeah, I think that was one of the one of the ways that I'm always trying to figure out, you know, how much on board an employer is when we start talking about these things, because as much as we like to think that everything's going to go smoothly, we know that it's not. And so I'm really looking for the buy-in from everyone. And so, you know, in our market, the insurance company that Ari West was with historically waits until what they consider the very last moment to release a renewal. So we saw the renewal for the first time 60 days before the effective date. And so you see this 25% increase, you know, basically no one would, everyone declined to quote fully insured. We already knew we were going to go self-insured, but everyone declined to quote just from doing our market analysis. So if they, I mean, they really had no options. And so Jenny and I remember having a conversation with her talking about, you know, this is what this is going to look like. This is how it's going to work. But I really needed her to, you know, say, you understand everything that can go wrong in a value-based approach from a balanced billing perspective and disruption, and know that, you know, we can get through it and we have the solutions in place and the processes in place to deal with it. But you're going to be here with me, you know, step by step, hand in hand, to make sure that that first time that employee calls and he's mad and his wife's mad, that we're going to have an answer for him. And it's not, we're not going to throw the towel in right off the bat.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's no question. Anytime you do anything in life that's meaningful, there's going to be challenges and bumps and all that. At the same time, I like to remind people that, you know, we're the, you know, our country is the undisputed world leaders in medical bill driven bankruptcy. And, you know, it's responsible for 2/3 of the bankruptcies in this country. It'll probably go up, you know, with what's going on right now. And 70% of those people had quote unquote insurance. So that's hardly preventing that harm. And, you know, my family's been pretty fortunate on health stuff. But man, when you get those bills, none of it makes any sense. I, you know, says explanation of benefits, but it didn't really explain anything to me. And so, you know, I think that's always good to bear in mind as you go through that. But again, you know, things can go wrong. You know, what are the, some of the things, what were some of the bumps, you know, hindsight, of course, 2020, what were some of those challenges and how did you get through that? Because they are going to happen.
You know, I would say from our perspective, from the consulting perspective, one of the biggest challenges we had was we had this 25% increase fully insured. We had no options in the fully insured market. Even in the short term, we knew long term that wasn't going to be the option, but even in the short term, we didn't have any options. But the data that we got, I don't even know that Jenny knows this, but they were actually getting data through almost a glitch in the carrier system. They weren't supposed to be getting data. So they had, at like the beginning of their plan year, they had been over 100, which in Tennessee, that's the cutoff to get data for any data at all for fully insured. So I think they'd had 101 employees. Well, they had fallen below that number within the first month. And so the carrier was not giving them the reports and thought they didn't have access to it. But the previous broker was getting the reports through their online portal. And so when we took it over, the carrier recognized, because I called and said, hey, we need to get all the reports switched over to our portal. And the carrier was like, oh, well, they don't have access to those reports. And I said, well, they do. We can, you know, we can see them. I can see every month up to this point. And she said, well, that's a mistake. That's, you know, we can't give you that information. And so we actually had a really long fight with the carrier about getting access to the data. To the point, I mean, they tried every trick in the book of it's HIPAA, you know, it's, we can't give it to you. And to the point where our firm, we actually threatened to get an attorney involved to get access to the data. And so then finally they agreed to give us data for the rest of the year, but they let us know that they would not give us data moving forward after the year. And so we needed stop loss, and we couldn't, without that data, we couldn't really get stop loss. And even then the data was so thin and our timeline was so short, we didn't have the ability to do health questionnaires. And so it became, how do we find someone in the market that's willing to take this data? And that's what ultimately led us to going into a captive the first year, someone that would shadow price it. But even those numbers shadow priced, which just means they basically mirror your fully insured renewal and they add about 15% to it as your worst case. That number was too big of a number for the budget. And so that's what led us to do reference-based pricing the first year, going from fully insured to reference-based pricing within about a 30-day window. That was the part of the biggest hurdle that we had from a consulting side, is how do we make that jump? But that's, I told Jen, I was like, this is jumping off the cliff. Like, there's no going back from this.
Yeah, it's ripping off the Band-Aid for sure. But
it's
risk-reward too. So you've seen a reduction, right? That's great. What has that done, anything to sort of how you've changed the benefits design for the employees? Or are they seeing, there's obviously this new model. Maybe talk a little bit about how it impacts their pocketbook or not. And what do they do when, assuming it's not an emergency scenario, what do they do to actually access care, and how is that different?
Do you want to take this, Jenny, or you want me to?
I want you.
Okay. So for what we did, the employees were basically able, and when I do groups, when we have reference-based pricing or value-based plans, we always try to have that be the last door of access. And so with RE West, we included things like bundled surgery. We had contracts with LabCorp, so we got free labs. So our direct, and then our bundled, we had outpatient surgery and imaging that was all included at $0 to employees. So we tried to give an employee essentially every opportunity to use their plan at a $0 out of pocket, including prescription, if they would listen to some type of navigation, concierge service, and just make an informed decision. So we had that, and then what ultimately ended up happening is when we had the big cost reduction, is we had three plans the first year, and they were, I would call them middle of the road plans, deductibles between $3,000 and $4,000, but only one of them had copays. The rest were what we would call high deductible plans with, no offices at copays. And so we had such a big reduction, we actually eliminated all the plans except the richest plan that we offered. We gave everyone offices at copays, everyone prescription drug copays, and then their deductions after the first year were what those had been for basically the base plan the previous year. So everyone either, almost everyone got a better plan at a lower cost than what they'd had the year before. And for those people that were already on the richest plan, they just had a lower deduction out of their check. The people that were paying on the lowest plan got a better plan at the same cost they'd had before. So ultimately 2 years of no rate increases to employees.
What sort of dollar difference is that from the high to the low in terms of the average, worker?
Off the top of my head, I think that spread was somewhere around $30 to $50 a week, weekly payroll. So it was a pretty significant, that's just employee only. And RE West does contribute as well to the dependent tier. So I think for family, that it might have been close to $200 a week difference for someone who had, a spouse and children covered on the plan.
Yeah, that's real money. So, most individuals in our economy, open enrollment means great news, pay more, get less, right? And so you delivered something different. Did people, were they skeptical, like that this was real? I mean, what was their reaction on that part of it?
I think from the conversations that we had from employees, I think there was a level of skepticism. And so a lot of it was just, really drilling down deep into education about how things were going to work, citing specific examples of, if this happens, this is how the process will work. You're still going to have an ID card. We did do a network for physician services. So we were value-based only on the facility side. So everyone had that comfort of having a logo on their ID card, and everyone was having copays. And so what we did for open enrollment, since Jenny said, we're truck drivers, 15 different states, is open enrollment's a little bit of a challenge. And so we did all the traditional, posters and benefit cards and benefit guides mailed to employees' houses, but we really needed to get spouses involved, because for a lot of these drivers, they're on the road. And so it's the spouse that's dealing with the bills that come in or the EOBs. And so what we did is we actually did over a 3 or 4 day period, we did call-in enrollment meetings. So we would have, 5 to 6 drivers call in, basically like a Zoom meeting without Zoom, with their spouse. And we would go over the benefits, answered questions, They could ask specific questions about medication. You know, we were looking up medications for people on the fly and getting back to them. If people had pending surgeries and things like that, we were reaching out to their providers to kind of explain what it was going to look like on the front end and catch to see if we could get any disruption from some facilities that may not accept the value-based payment model. And so a lot of it was, I think they got a level of comfort of seeing, of knowing that something, you know, it had been bad for so long that we're trying something new, and they just knew from the culture that there was no way that Jenny and her brother Bill were going to do something without vetting it pretty thoroughly. And they were always been pretty innovative. And so I think we had to buy in a little bit from that side, just inherent, and then just seeing the things that we could provide to employees. And then obviously it just takes a guinea pig or two, obviously. And then the word gets around and everyone starts to feel a little bit more comfortable with how things are working.
Jenny, you want to add anything to that? I mean, did you hear any kind of, you know, in the office or any back channel feedback on, you know, how people were reacting to some of this?
Well, the first response was that they were very pleased with the prescription drug side of this. I think with truck drivers, obviously they are away from home and they are in, they're everywhere. So we every year have an occasion where you've got someone with kidney stones, or you've got someone sick on the road, and how do we handle that situation. And so the idea of having concierge was very foreign to them, someone that they could call. They inherently have pushback on including anybody on any decision making, even us. So how do you get them to understand to use an app and to have faith and confidence that that was the right solution? And so the other thing that truck drivers do, they talk a lot. So, you know, one success led to another, and then in time they start to have faith that this is how they approach a situation. We also want to have some guidance with them and give them confidence that this is going to work for them. And so over time, which happens fairly quickly, they begin to have buy-in that this is a good thing and this actually works.
Yeah. Any particular stories that stick out with you, that at least that you're aware of particular members having an experience, you know, that, again, good, bad, or indifferent, right? That strikes you, or if anybody's, you know, grabbed you know, when they're in the office or, you know, whatever. And any individual stories that are of note?
We have one, I think, that was you know, pretty huge for a family. Alex has more knowledge about how this played out, but if he could speak to that.
So we had an employee who had a child, pretty young child, that had a couple significant health issues. And one of them in particular needed a specific medication that was, you know, it's pretty expensive, not as expensive as some of the things we hear on the news, but it ran about $40,000 a year. It was a specialty med. And so they were even having trouble affording the copay for that medication when it was lumped in with all the other medications that they were having to purchase either over the counter, or they were even taking some medications that were off label. And so we were actually able to working with our PBM. So we had transitioned when we did this to a transparent pass-through PBM. We were actually able to get that medication for free to not only the member and his family, but also to the plan. So we were able to use a manufacturer assistance program based on income that we would not have been able to do using one of the big three PBMs. So that, you know, that was a big deal. And then I think, you know, we've had numerous, you know, orthopedic surgeries that have happened at no cost that people have been putting off for a while, whether they were knee replacements or, you know, shoulder surgeries, things that just come that are common with a physical job, like being a truck driver, that I think have helped. And I don't see this side of Jenny's business, but I would like to think that it's probably also helped with some of their workers' comp costs a little bit associated with some of those things, that now maybe there's not so many Monday morning injuries that are popping up that are workers' comps, because they can get those taken care of by the health plan for free as well.
Yeah, that makes a big difference. Yeah, I mean, one thing that you know, because there's so much money to be made in the drug side, I mean, one of the things I'll share with people is there's seven of the Fortune 50, I mean, these are the biggest companies in the world, are companies that their main business or most significant profitable business is basically just administering drug plants, not pharmaceutical companies. There's only one pharmaceutical company in the Fortune 50, and it's Johnson & Johnson, and they do a bunch of other stuff. So not to let them off the hook, but it's pretty amazing the amount of money that's being made off of administering these plans. So you step in, it can make a big difference. And a lot of people aren't aware of these drug companies have these what they call access programs that you know, are for people with more modest incomes. And with 60% of the workforce makes $20 an hour or less, there's a lot of people who are eligible for those programs. So you can take something that's costing that member and the employer a lot of money and potentially taking it to zero, but it only happens if you have somebody, you know, that's working on your behalf with your interests in mind. And it's just, it's one of those things like, gosh, I've never heard of that. Well, if you've never heard of that, that's probably indicative of you're not working with somebody who's being diligent enough and is not knowledgeable. So that's great to hear about that. Maybe talk a little bit about the bundles. Like, how does that work? What does that mean? How do you communicate that? What's that program all about?
So we partner with a firm called the Kiss Card, which is, they basically have a national network in place of bundled contracts through about 400 procedures and include major imaging. And so a bundle is essentially, it's a set price for a specific procedure, but it's an all-inclusive price. So it includes pre-op visits, it includes the actual procedure, all the lab, you know, anesthesia, which typically is the one balance bill that everyone gets because the anesthesia is never in network. So it includes all the hardware, anything associated with that procedure is included in the bundle. It also covers the post-op care, and it kind of puts the, I mean, it does put the provider also at a little bit at risk because they have to be, you know, any complications or infections he's going to have to fix, and he's already been paid. So there's a little bit of a risk share there, unlike, you know, the commercial world where if you have an employee that has a knee replacement and something goes wrong and he ends up back in the hospital, you're going to get a different bill. That's not really, you know, even though it's related to that procedure, it's going to be a new bill, new member deductible and out of pocket costs, and it's going to hit the plan. It's going to be expensive that readmittance. So the bundle is really just an all inclusive price. Typically we're looking for, you know, those are going to happen in an outpatient, you know, freestanding ambulatory surgical center. They're not going to happen inpatient, and we're looking for providers that have higher quality standards than what you may typically find within a commercial network. So some simple things like making sure they're board certified in the surgery that they do, which is kind of a funny thing to think of, but there's lots of providers in the network that aren't board certified in the things that they do within your commercial network. And so that's what a bundle is, pretty high level.
Yeah. No, I mean, that quality can make a big difference. I mean, one of the things that, you know, is in that the CEO's guide book you mentioned, there's a bit around centers of excellence and the rates of misdiagnosis and overtreatment is pretty extraordinary. I mean, it's on the low end, 20% in cancer cases, which is not low. I mean, that's pretty terrible for such a scary diagnosis. You know, up to like 67% in some areas of musculoskeletal, you know, for different joint things and whatnot. And, you know, so it's very significant. Obviously it's hard to price gouge on a surgery that never needed to happen, you know? And so like a lot of times physical therapy is the best approach, but you know, one of the things that was really striking when I was talking to the former head of benefits at Walmart, you know, they obviously have a huge workforce and they really went after these centers of excellence in a big way and really pioneered their. And on organ transplants, which, you know, not frequent, but, you know, that's about as disruptive as a procedure as you're going to have. They found that when they sent people to a second opinion at places like Mayo Clinic, where, by the way, the doctors aren't salaried and are not paid, you know, eat what you kill model type of thing, like unfortunately, a lot are, they found that 40%, 40, of the planned organ transplants from, you know, a community hospital where they went and got a second opinion were medically unnecessary. I mean, that's pretty crazy if you think about it, given how high risk that is, and you're going to have to be on medications, you know, they're expensive and complex, and, you know, there's a lot of risk in those. And when you need it, you need it. But, you know, that's 40% of the time you don't. That's pretty amazing.
Right. I would say, you know, I'd interject here, Dave, that Jenny has a pretty unique story about an organ transplant that happened probably 15 years ago with their business, if she wants to share that.
Sure. So we had experience with being self-insured. We had a company that was larger than where we currently are. It was a good model for us at the time. Then we sold that and went to a smaller company, fewer participants, and maintain the self-insurance status. We had a participant that needed a transplant, and it just about put us out of business. So we were faced with the decision of, do we pay for this or do we not? And so that really informed my decision going forward with this. I was incredibly nervous about the self-insured, my past experience really informed this new one. And so Alex had a solution for that. And then the stop loss was a big piece of this. And so there's a peace of mind with my past history that we would not repeat our mistakes with what we do now.
Yeah, that's good to, yeah. Unfortunately, I've had that experience, but, you know, sometimes those really do guide you into the future. As you were making this recent switch, you know, one of the common tactics that's used is, you know, to kind of protect the status quo is you use fear, uncertainty, and doubt, right, to sort of protect the status quo. Was any of that sent your way by folks trying to protect the status quo? Like, oh man, this is going to be doom and gloom, and, you know, you have a really troubled workforce, or, you know, whatever line they use. Did you have any of that?
Absolutely. And, you know, I don't know what to say other than we just put our blinders on and plowed forward. But yes, no.
What sort of things did they, do you remember what sort of things they were saying to you to try?
Well,
to...
exactly what you're talking about. You know, truck drivers aren't exactly the most healthy folks in the world. And so they do lead a sedentary lifestyle, and they are exposed to fast food and truck stop food. And so how do you overcome that? A part of our training has always been, you know, keep a refrigerator, carry a cooler, pack your food, control what you're eating, exercise. So, but with that said, you know, you can't make people do those things. And so we recognize, yes, you know, but does it mean that, you know, we can't do better? So that was a piece. Truck drivers, this will never work. You know, we have no history with anybody else doing this. And it was so far out of, I think, their realm. And I think that's what you're dealing with so often, is an agent that is in their own little world, unwilling to look at things in different ways because it requires effort. And then you got a guy like Alex who, like I said, this passion thing, you can't teach. And so he's got it, and it inspires confidence for me, at least. And it was a leap of faith, without a doubt. Even when you feel like you understand all the components, there will always be something you didn't think about happen to you. And so Alex was dealing with the people, and I'm dealing with the background. How do I account for this? How does this actually work logistically with the claims? You know, do I need another checking account? I mean, there are a lot of pieces that you try to then put together to figure out how does this all work. And so those are things we worked through and figured it out.
Yep. On your side, Alex, any particular FUD that was sent your way and you dealt with?
Yeah, I mean, I am probably not one of the favorite brokers in our community when it comes to the insurance companies. So, I mean, I get calls all the time from people saying things like, you know, they'll pull my appointments, or this will never work, or, you know, I've been offered, you know, bonuses and all kinds of stuff to keep things the way that they are. And you know, transparency is a big part of what we do. It's also a big part of Health Rosetta. So, you know, we do the compensation disclosure form and all of these things. But yeah, I think from a broker's perspective, it's a lot more work, honestly, to be the consultant on a group that has an unbundled self-funded plan, because you're essentially managing, you know, for RA West, I think there was probably between 12 and 14 vendors that our account management team was having to manage at any one time. That's a lot of moving parts when you're coming from a fully insured, you know, boxed environment where it's one person, one phone number that kind of manages everything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, and Jay, so, you know, I mean, you sort of surmise this, but, you know, the process we went through, that Alex went through, you know, we've had over 1,000, benefits broker consultants, start the process of getting into the Health Rosetta program. About 15% have made it through. You know, it's pretty rigorous. There's an education, there's a testing, there's an interviewing process. It's actually, the bars continue to go up. Because what we're really trying to do is, you know, it should be a match, right? In that we have a particular point of view. We see what works. If it's not for you, that's fine. So we want to filter people out, you know, and some people are looking for a mail-in diploma or something. And that's not what you get. This is such an important area. I mean, for most companies, it's the second biggest, maybe third biggest cost after payroll. And it's obviously people's health and well-being. And, you know, I wrote a piece in Forbes that was entitled, This Job Could Save America. And it was talking about benefits brokers. And, you know, the flip side, on the negative side, you know, we've had 20 years of wage stagnation and decline, even before this current situation, that's, you know, overwhelmingly that's driven by healthcare. You know, employers are spending much more money. It's not like they're stingy. You know, it hasn't come home. And meanwhile, doctors and nurses' pay hasn't fundamentally changed. I mean, a lot of people aren't aware, like doctors and nurses, all the other clinicians, all in, you know, all those people. You know, there's, I think, 6 million clinicians. They get 27 cents of every dollar that we're supposed to be spent on healthcare. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. And so I often say healthcare isn't expensive. What's expensive is profiteering and price gouging and overtreatment. And, you know, you have to do a reset. And when you do, it's actually not that complicated, but it is a change. Any particular, you know, somebody who may be in the situation you were a couple years ago to whenever, you know, you were starting this journey, any particular pieces of advice you would give other people, you know, from kind of the CFO and company owner perspective, you know, now that you've learned or you wish you'd known before, any particular words of wisdom there, Jenny?
Well, I think there's a level of commitment and buy-in that you have to have, because it's not easy. There are going to be pieces. I mean, I'm in problem solve mode every day. So I think maybe people at my level, that's just inherent with what they're doing. And nothing will be, it's not going to be any different with this. You're going to have little hiccups, but they're really pretty small. So commitment, buy-in, and just stay with it. We had a history of that with our truckers insurance. And so we felt like that was the best decision for us in that moment. And we feel like this is the best decision for us in this moment. And so just stay with it. Don't quit.
Yeah. That's great. So, you know, wrapping up here, and if there's any additional questions, I've been, you know, getting some questions, but if there's any additional, people should fire those off before we're wrapping up. But maybe just give us, both of you, give a little perspective on kind of what's next on the horizon. You've had some progress, some great results. What's kind of next on your docket, of at least when it comes to health benefits?
I think from what, go ahead, Jenny.
Well, I think from my perspective, more of the same. We're going to continue to try to give more value to our people. And we feel like they have just been used and abused. So how do you do a better job of taking care of them? And so from my perspective, it's about the premiums and their care. And do they have a good understanding of how this works? So we're going to continue to try to drive down our premiums and deductibles. And that's our goal.
Great. Alex, any yeah. Final words of wisdom, or what's on the horizon?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's what I'll echo what Jenny said, is the goal is to get the deductibles to a point where, you know, even today we have a $3,000 deductible, which I think most employers, at least in our market, that's considered a really rich deductible. But our goal is to continue to buy that down, as Jenny said, without a cost increase to the employees, and then also expand the opportunities that they have for a $0 out-of-pocket care. You know, we're working on trying to get some direct contracts with facilities to make this a little bit easier from an employee perspective. And then also just trying to, how do we streamline, like I said, you know, 12 or 14 vendors, a lot of vendors for a consultant and, you know, our team to keep up with, but from an employee perspective, it's really a lot. And so how do we continue communication on, you know, a monthly, you know, quarterly basis to the employees to remind them of the things that they need, to keep them using the apps that we've provided them. The nice thing is that RE West uses a lot of technology already. And so that wasn't a big hurdle for us, which I think for some employers is going to be a big hurdle. But with the economy and the things going on now, I think technology is going to play a bigger role than it's ever played in the past.
Yeah, I think everybody's going through kind of a crash course on Zoom and all these other tools that have become pretty indispensable. So just want to wrap up. Thank you both. Congratulations on your progress. And I wish you all the luck in continuing that. And hopefully, you know, others, you know, throughout the country and in your community can learn from your example, because, you know, that's the most credible thing, right? Is real results from real people. They're just, you know, this is kind of the bedrock of, you know, the country, is just family owned businesses, and they care about their people and doing the right thing. So really appreciate what y'all have been doing. And thanks again. And that will wrap up the webinar. So we look forward, we'll have a recording. People want to share it with other folks up there. And we'll continue to have more webinars and information, and we're going to kind of ramp it up some, you know, given the level of interest in making changes, given that there's a lot of economic challenges out there. So thank you all, and hope you have a great weekend.
Thank you.
Thanks, Seth.
All right.